failure to report signs of abuse can have serious criminal and civil liabilities for the mandated reporter, but on a much broader sense has very dire consequences for that child who's been exposed to abuse.
That child needs somebody to stand up for them, and that person should be you.
You are listening to CASA Kane County. This is a special podcast sponsored by the Kane County State's Attorney's Office and CASA Kane County. It is aimed at everyone in Kane County who, in their official capacity, are in contact with children. Individuals who have opportunities to observe indicators that may point to alleged abuse and neglect. Individuals in this role are called mandated reporters, the topic of this special podcast. Our guests today are Kane County State's Attorney Joe McMahon and Kane County Assistant State's Attorney Lark Cowart, who is also the county's Child Protection and Juvenile Delinquency Supervisor. Thank you so much for joining us today to discuss the role of the mandated reporter. With all of us in Kane County who have either direct or indirect interactions with children, I'd like to take advantage of the fact that you're both attorneys to establish a legal and a definitional base for our topic. So, a two-part question. What does it mean to be a mandated reporter, and who is a mandated reporter? Lark, could you lead us off with the first question? What does it mean to be a mandated reporter?
Sure, Jim. What it means to be a mandated reporter is that you are required by law to immediately report suspected child abuse if you have a reasonable belief that a child you know in your professional capacity is being abused or neglected.
A second question, Joe. Who is a mandated reporter?
The law is very specific about who is a mandated reporter, but you can kind of break that down into seven groups. Essentially, medical personnel, school personnel, social service and mental health employees, all law enforcement personnel, all coroner and medical examiner personnel, and then anyone that works in a child care setting. In addition, members of the clergy are mandated reporters.
This next question is very obvious, but I think our listeners would be interested in the rationale behind your response. The question, why should I report suspected child abuse?
Well, I can tell you why somebody should report suspected child abuse. We have seen in the court system, and certainly in the state's attorney's office, what happens to a child when they finally come into court. Oftentimes, before they get there, before the cases make their way into the system, the child has been exposed to weeks, months, and sometimes years of physical and sexual abuse. And in most, if not all, of those cases, if someone had intervened earlier, they could have stopped the abuse and maybe prevented other children from being abused as well. In a lot of these cases, we have seen children who have had contact with mandated reporters, and those mandated reporters weren't fully aware of their legal obligations to report the suspected abuse. The other reason is simply that mandated reporters are required by law to make that call to DCFS if they believe a child has been abused or neglected. And the failure to report signs of suspected abuse can have serious criminal and civil liabilities for the mandated reporter, but on a much broader sense has very dire consequences for that child who's been exposed to abuse.
If I suspect abuse or neglect, whom do I tell or what should I do?
Well, immediately the reporter should call DCFS. They have an abuse hotline, which is 1-800-25-ABUSE, A-B-U-S-E. That's 1-800-252-2873. You can also call the local police department, either 911 or through their non-emergency number. But the important message is that people make the report, and they make that report immediately.
Let's dwell a little bit on that term immediate. Lark, if you could address the issue of how soon should I call the DCFS hotline after I suspect abuse?
So the law says that the call has to be made immediately. And like any good law, there's no definition that goes with that. So it's a little bit up to the discretion of the person who's making the call, and that's going to depend on the facts and circumstances in each case. The greater the immediacy, the greater the urgency that you're seeing with abuse and neglect, the more immediate that phone call needs to be. But no matter what, that call has to be made as quickly as possible for that child's safety.
Can I just tell my boss or supervisor about the suspected abuse?
A mandated reporter is required to notify DCFS when they suspect child abuse. And internal policies, employment terms, past practices of the business will not relieve someone of their legal obligation to notify DCFS if in that process the employee who is a mandated reporter notifies their supervisor, but is also very contemporaneously or very shortly thereafter notifying DCFS to comply with their legal obligations, I think that's probably compliance with the law.
Is there anything I shouldn't do?
One thing we ask the mandated reporters to not do is to interview the child, because our DCFS investigators and the police investigators have gone through extensive training on victim-sensitive interviews and forensic interviewing. And what will sometimes happen is, in the effort to get more information and to fully understand the situation, is the wrong types of questions can get asked that can later hurt the ability to prosecute something criminally, handle something in abuse and neglect court, or send the wrong message to the child.
I'm a mandated reporter. I suspect abuse. I've never called the hotline before. What kind of information should I have before I dial that number?
The more information you have when you call DCFS, the easier it's going to be to follow up on that investigation. At a minimum, you need to know the child's name. It is helpful to know the child's date of birth, because they won't take the call if the person isn't at least under 18, but they will also handle it differently depending on the age of the child. Any information about the family, the mother, the name of the mother or father, the address, because DCFS is going to have to investigate this, they are going to need to go out and meet with the child or meet with the family. They need to know where to go. It's also helpful to know if there are other children in the home and what their ages might be, if there are other caregivers in the home, and then all of the information that you as a reporter have about what happened. Why are you making this phone call? And it is okay if you don't have that personal information, that personal knowledge. If somebody came to you and disclosed, that's fine. You don't have to have seen it yourself, but you want to have as much complete information to give DCFS so that they can continue their investigation.
What if I'm not 100% sure that abuse has taken place?
If you are sitting there and you are thinking, I'm uncomfortable with this situation, something's not right here, I'm worried for this child, you should be picking up that phone. The law says you have to have reasonable cause to believe. It's a very low standard. You do not have to be 100% sure. You do not have to have firsthand information, and you need to err on the side of caution. So if you have concerns, you should pick up that phone and make that call. If you have made a mistake, that's okay. There is immunity. You're not going to be prosecuted. You're not going to be in trouble for making a phone call that you believed was necessary.
Okay, I've made my phone call. What happens next?
There's really a number of things that happen kind of behind the scenes. For DCFS, an investigator is going to be assigned. There will be some level of preliminary review and then an investigation conducted by DCFS of the allegation and the information that is provided by the reporter, whether that's a mandated reporter or a concerned person from the community. But if the investigation indicates abuse, neglect, or both, the case is then labeled as indicated and pursued further. That could be home visits from DCFS where a safety plan is put in voluntarily. It could be a referral for court action, for court orders on limited visitation or access to the children who are the subject of the abuse or neglect, or other kids who have been exposed to that environment. But some of the investigations, you know, don't turn anything up. They were a good faith report. There was an indication that it looked like something was going on, but upon further review, it's unfounded, and the matter is generally closed.
Okay, now what if we have the situation where there is a finding of abuse? What happens next?
Well, either a finding or abuse or neglect, there's a lot of uncertainty at that point about how the case is going to move forward. The case can be indicated, as Joe said, they were able to confirm that there's a problem here. There was abuse or neglect, and the case could be closed at that point because there's no longer a risk for one reason or another. The case can be indicated and then referred for intact family services, or it can be referred to court. The children can be removed from the home. Those are all different possibilities. And if the children are removed, they may go home, they may not go home. But the goal of the court process is to safely reunify this family. And that is one guarantee of what is going to happen moving forward, is that we are all going to work towards that first. Along that way, there may be a trial. The reporter may or may not be called to testify.
Will the family or others be able to find out that I called?
Well, state law protects the identity of all reporters, and reports can be made anonymously. But an anonymous report is a little more difficult to verify. The reality is that they're less likely to result in action by DCFS when it's an anonymous report. Even with an anonymous report, yes, the family may figure it out, but not always.
What happens if I don't call?
Well, the most important thing and the most serious thing is that the abuse or neglect will continue, and that this child will continue to suffer, and maybe other children will suffer as well. There are also consequences to the mandated reporter who's chose not to make that phone call. There can be criminal consequences. They start as a Class A misdemeanor, but can go up to being a felony. There's also potential civil liabilities.
Somebody has told me I am a mandated reporter, just by the very function of my job. But I don't have any training in mandated reporting. Is there training available for me?
There is training, and it's pretty easily accessible. It's available through the DCFS website and the Illinois State Board of Education's website. Casa Kane County will have links to that information on the Casa Kane County website. There's an online training program. It's interactive. I think it takes somewhere between 60 and 90 minutes. And it talks about what your obligations are, who's a mandated reporter. And you can print out kind of certification that you completed that online training program. And that's a good place to start.
Up to this point, most of the questions that you've answered have been a mixture of definitional, legal, and procedural answers. I'd now like to shift the conversation to a set of real-world situations that many of our listeners may find themselves in. Here's our first situation. I'm a high school teacher. What if I learn that a teenage student has been abused? Do I immediately call the hotline and then tell my principal?
Someone with knowledge about the situation should immediately call DCFS. And depending on a lot of factors in that scenario, there should be a call to the local police department as well. Now, your internal employment policies may require you to provide that information kind of up the chain of command within your organization. But whether you tell the principal or the dean of students or somebody else within the administration of that school setting, that really has no bearing on your legal responsibility as a mandated reporter. And a teacher in that situation that you described is absolutely a mandated reporter and must make that call immediately to DCFS.
Another scenario, I work in a large daycare center and I observe suspicious bruising on a four-year-old child. If I suspect abuse, do I immediately call the hotline and then tell my supervisor?
So going back to what Joe said earlier, we're not as concerned about the exact order that things happen in. For instance, your large daycare worker could notice the bruising and wants to make their supervisor aware of it and make the call together. There's no reason that they can't do it as long as collectively they are making that call immediately.
Okay, I'm an employee, work with children, and we have a policy, and it's in our policy handbook that we all sign at the beginning of the year, and we agree to abide by these policies. So we have this policy that we must notify our supervisor of any signs of suspected abuse. Does my responsibility end when I notify that supervisor of the suspected abuse?
I can't answer this question clearly enough. Mandated reporters must notify DCFS regardless of what their employment policy or employment practice has been. What supervisor to notify, who not to notify. The mandated reporting law requires the hotline call immediately to DCFS.
I know you've given a very definitive answer to this, but I'm going to ask another question that I know some of our listeners may have. Again, I am that
worker. I am that mandated reporter. And I have informed my supervisor according to that work policy that I signed. Then I learned 2 days later that my supervisor hasn't done anything to notify DCFS. What do I do?
Make that call. Make it immediately. If you have trusted somebody to discharge your legal obligation, like this person did in your scenario where they trusted their supervisor to do it, you need to make sure that you were there when it happens or that you have verification. And if you have neglected to do that and you find out later it never happened, instantaneous phone call to DCFS.
My final question, can I be fired or disciplined if I place the child's interests first and the chain of command reporting policy second?
You should always place the interest of that child's well-being first, ahead of an internal work policy. The public policy of this state is crystal clear, and it requires mandated reporters to notify DCFS immediately. If an internal employment policy is in conflict with that state law or the public policy of this state, as it is described through the laws, the law wins. Your employer, your boss, your supervisor cannot lawfully stop you from making a report to DCFS that you're making in good faith. They cannot ask you to modify what you report, nor can they take action against you for a good faith report when you are fulfilling your legal responsibility under the Mandated Reporting Act.
Thank you both for your time and your insights and a pretty definitive statement to all of us who are mandated reporters, and that is, if we suspect, immediately pick up that phone.
Thank you for having us and giving us a chance to talk about this really important topic with your listeners.
You have been listening to CASA Kane County. This has been a special podcast devoted to the important topic of mandated reporting and the role of the mandated reporter in Kane County. If you would like to find out more about mandated reporting and the training mentioned in this podcast, be sure to visit the special section of our website devoted to mandated reporting. It is located at casakanecounty.org.
This podcast has been a production of LearnSure.